Great show for you. Everything you need to know to get ready for the weekend on this Friday podcast. We begin next. First, I so want to urge you to prepare. I told you about 2 months ago, that I was putting my family on high alert to make sure that everybody knew where we were supposed to meet and everything else if things went to hell in a handbasket, that I was preparing to make sure that we had everything that we needed and then maybe just a little bit more for some of our neighbors, that we had curtailed our spending as much as we could to make sure that we were getting out of debt because trouble is coming. And this is a warning. The time is growing very, very late. I want you to at least look into protecting your savings, your investment for your 401k. Please look into how you can protect these things, your investments, your money, with gold or silver. Gold is expected to go through the roof. It already has, it's crazy what's happening right now. And that's because the world has lost its mind. And it's only going to go up, I think. Don't listen to me for investment advice. I'm just telling you what I believe and what I do. Silver is still at a pretty good price. And that is going to be something that you're going to need, I think, just in kind of in a changeover time. You never know what's going to happen. So please, would you call Lear Capital now? Get your free wealth protection guide. Lear will also credit your account $250 towards your purchase just because you listen to me. So you don't have to buy anything now. Just get their guide and listen to them. Do your own homework. And if you decide to buy at Lear Capital, 800-957-GOLD, 800-957-GOLD.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I'm going to talk about a few things. How everything is changing, how the media is being used to change things, and this insane attack on Elon Musk. Memory is really kind of important. It's more than a record. It's more than the sum total of our experiences, the chronicle of our lives. More than a tally of good and bad lessons learned, although it is those things as well. But fundamentally, our memory is the key to who we are. Entities which lose their memory, people, groups, churches, nations, lose not just the mere knowledge of their past, of who they were or have been, but they also lose the knowledge of themselves, the knowledge of their purpose, of who they are, who they're meant to be. They lose the present and the future. Remember when you were a kid, it seemed like everybody on TV suffered from amnesia at some point? I thought amnesia would play a big role in life. No, it doesn't. It's like Gilligan's Island in the quicksand. I've never run into quicksand ever before. And I've never had amnesia.
Although some days I'd like to have amnesia, but.
But we are memory-holing things. What is the memory hole? The memory hole was the Ministry of Love, where you were taught to hate, and the Ministry of Truth, where you were taught what lies were. And you were forced to do it in 1984. Memory hole was a door in every room where people were being taught the truth. And you'd open up the little door and you'd take whatever the truth was, all of the photos, the documents, and you'd throw them in the memory hole. And at the bottom of the memory hole was a fiery furnace. And so it would burn up all the record, and it was in the memory hole. You don't retrieve that in the memory hole. It's gone. When you lose the knowledge of yourself, the knowledge of your purpose, what you were meant to be, you are truly lost. Think of any movie or series that starts with a hero waking up to find their memory gone. Their fundamental character traits may remain, but they're unmoored. Not only unable to recognize family from strangers, but without knowledge of who they are and what that means and how they should act next. All of a sudden, somebody throws a blow and they're like, and they're able to just take on anybody. Whoa, what kind of man am I? Am I a killer? They don't know. It leaves people open to manipulation, to being reprogrammed with lies by whatever bad actor wants to use them for their own purposes. Have you seen Argylle yet? It's exactly what I'm talking about. This is also true for societies. If we forget our stories, if we stop telling them or allow others to edit them to suit their purposes, we lose them. Forget both who we are and who we can and should be, and we leave ourselves open to anyone with an alternate story to tell. This is what's happened to religion, Christianity. We stopped reading the Bible, and so now we're listening to scientists and atheists and people who are saying, live for today, man. What's wrong? What's wrong with that? I mean, okay, so, O.J. Simpson killed the ice cream guy. What's the problem? He was just living his life on his terms. There is a problem. We forget who we are, who we serve, and we leave ourselves open. Now, this is the open intent of the 1619 Project and Howard Zinn. It's the logic behind the many reimagining policies, behind the words of Michelle Obama.
Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices. We are going to have to change our conversation. We're going to have to change our traditions, our history. We're going to have to move into a different place as a nation to provide the kind of future that we all want.
This is the trade of every postmodern, post-Western, post-Zionist, post-monotheistic, radical atheist, thinker, Marxist, or leader. Just forget the stories of our founding and our purpose. Remember who you are. Simba, remember who you are. Well, that seems kind of important that Simba remembers his roots. Why is it not so important for us? These stories that tell us why we're here and what we're here to do. We have new stories for you. Stories that will tell us we're all born in sin. That we're all irredeemably evil. That we should be torn down forever, because then we can go ahead and do so. It's always the same. First, the old memories are torn apart, the old stories. They have to be denied, delegitimized, erased. And then the new, more suitable, enlightened ones can replace them. Some, including maybe many on the left, truly believe the old stories are garbage. But they haven't done their homework. They truly believe the news stories are true, but they often openly believe that they believe this all while denying the foundation of the old stories. Still, they can enjoy the fruits of what's built on that foundation, the material and moral benefits that they take for granted and are currently destroying, because it's all they've ever known. But cut flowers are not life. What happens? You cut a flower and they fade, wilt, and die. They're a silent memory of what was and what could have been. To misquote Patrick Rothfuss, all around them hangs the cut flower silence of a beauty of a culture waiting to die. They don't produce any seeds. There's no next generation of flowers. When they fade, only rot will remain. What was will be no more. We are cutting the flowers of our future. The ultimate responsibility, and possibly the solution, is found with us. This only happens if we allow someone to cut us from the root. We must tell our stories. We must tell the truth. We must tell the stories of our own lives, of our families. Do you know why our families are so broken? Because we don't know where we came from. And I don't mean as a people, I mean as individuals. We don't know the stories of how we got here. We're all immigrants. That's what everybody says. We're all immigrants. But how many of us know who brought the family here? Why they brought the family here? What it cost them? We should do this on every available occasion. Family meals, trips, dates, nights out with friends. Honestly, because of everybody having a phone, we're losing them at a faster rate now. I remember sitting at the table, having to sit at the table while everybody was talking and all the holidays and everything else. And you would look at your sister or your brother and be like, if I have to hear this one more time. You'd hear the same stories over and over again. Yes. And that's why you know them. Are they happening in your family? Quintessentially, that's what holidays and rituals are for. Christmas displays and Hanukkahs, menorahs. If it's done right, they tell a story. If in the telling, the story grows in some ways, acquiring new depth, new focus, more profound meaning, all the better. If it accumulates anecdotes, commentary, interpretations, it becomes richer. Turns more and more from an account of something that happened into a story, something rich with meaning and lessons, as well as deeds and facts. Our holidays, 4th of July, what is it? We don't even call it Independence Day. We call it 4th of July. It's about what? Barbecues? Maybe fireworks? Getting sunburn? Those are important. But how many of us are telling the story? I know it's awkward and weird at first. This is the week of Passover. This is what Passover is all about. The Seder night is exactly what we need to be doing. The entire purpose of that is to tell the story, to discuss it, so it and its lessons can be carried on alive for another generation. And it's been working for the Jews for about 3,000 years. So as Christmas and Easter has kind of done with Christians, but that's going away. 4th of July is going away. Everything in our society is pushing our kids away from the stories, which means away from the truth of who they are, where they came from, why we're here as a people. Well, I'm here because I'm going to be famous on TikTok. Oh, that's why you were born? Okay. Perhaps more effort on the storytelling rather than the grilling could help us with some of the holidays like Independence Day and with other stories we dare not forget. Memory requires a conscious effort, a choice, a ritual. It requires that a story be told over and over and over again. Do you notice that there is a story being told now to Americans, about Americans, to the world? And it's being told over and over and over again. And look how quickly, because we have a void in our own homes, look how quickly everything's being lost. The first thing we have to do is know the truth and then stand up for the truth. Stand up to say, yo, you have no right to memory hole an event.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
So once in a while, somebody comes along that I really am excited to talk about. On the podcast this week, we have Alex Newman, and I think he is, he's a writer that I think I probably recommend to my producers, probably more than any other writer. He really, really gets it. And I talked to him about the world at large, because he's just come out with a new book on education. And he's also deep down the rabbit hole of the destruction of America and why America is being destroyed and what the plan is. And we talked about conspiracies and conspiracy theories. What's good, what's bad, what do we really need to know? He talks about the 50 in 5 plan. Wait until you hear about this. Here's cut 9, please.
Talk to me about the 50 in 5 plan.
So the UN has partnered with Bill Gates on this, what they call digital public infrastructure. It's a very fancy term. And I think the simplest way to understand it is they're building a giant digital gulag for all of humanity. So the UN Development Program has officially launched this. It was officially launched at the end of last year, where they're going to get 50 governments, they call them countries, but really they mean governments, to impose at least some major element of this digital public infrastructure on their population within 5 years. So 2028.
Passports.
Digital IDs. Mm-hmm. And those are already emerging. In fact, many states are developing these. Now, I just went through the airport yesterday. You can scan your digital ID QR code, right? So that's happening.
And that's really one of the main reasons for the COVID
absolutely
nonsense.
The architecture that was laid down is the backbone of this global control grid that they're building. So then you've got the central bank digital currencies, which are already being unveiled. Right? They've already been released. The World Economic Forum just said a few days ago, 98% of the governments and central banks in the world are working on these CBDCs. Once they're fully operational, I guarantee you, they're going to start waging war on cash much more openly. They'll say it's a tool for terrorists and pimps and you know, every nasty thing, tax cheats, everything you can think of. Then you've got the payment processing systems, and you've also got, we just had the head of the World Health Organization talk about this recently, the digital health certificates, the digital vaccine passports. They're taking what the EU developed during the COVID, which, by the way, the European Commission was promoting vaccine passports in May of 2019, long before anybody ever heard of a COVID or anything like that. So they're taking all of this together. And they are using it to build a control system that will not just be able to surveil and monitor everything you do on an unprecedented scale. When you combine it with AI, the ability to make sense of all this data, it's just mind-blowing, but also to manipulate what you do. And so they're talking about this, again, pretty openly. If you look at the World Economic Forum meetings, they talk about the benefits of programmable central bank digital currency, where they will be able to say who can buy what, when, under what conditions. And then the Bank for International Settlements, you know, Carol Quigley, to go back to him for a moment, Bill Clinton's mentor, the guy who really exposed this global agenda to create a one world system, he said the apex of the system was going to be the Bank for International Settlements. This is an institution that's almost entirely unknown to Americans. And what they are working on right now, and this is not a secret, it's not a conspiracy because it's not happening behind closed doors, is what they call a universal blockchain ledger. They want to tokenize every asset in the known universe, every farm, every car, every house, every tree, put it on this ledger, this blockchain ledger, and then you're only able to interact with this blockchain ledger using your biometric digital ID, using your central bank digital currencies. And so if I want to buy something from you, I can't just hand you a $100 bill. I've got to go on my device, connect to this blockchain system, transfer the central bank digital currencies to you. And so this is a mechanism for controlling humanity that I think is really unprecedented in human history. And when you take it all together, it's very obvious.
Can I tell you something? 10 years ago, I would have thought that was absolute madness.
2016, I might have thought that, you know, what is making of, I would have thought it was a lot farther down the road than we could, that we would ever get to anything like that. We are so close to that being a reality. The infrastructure is almost all complete. All we need is some sort of an event. We have weakened our kids. We have weakened our health. We have weakened our ability just to stand up. We've weakened every single institution. We've spent like money was going out of style. We didn't save. And what we did save, they've destroyed through inflation. Now, I just want you to go back. Think of how many times you have been told something is a conspiracy theory. Did you hear? I mean, the latest came out yesterday. Natural gas has now been banned. Natural gas stoves has been banned in all federal buildings. You cannot have it in federal buildings. Do you remember when they said that was a crazy conspiracy theory, that that would never happen? They're never going to do that. They are banning natural gas. They are doing everything they can to stop natural gas, while they are also stopping all fossil fuels. No oil. Shutting down giant swaths of oil fields because they just passed a bill, or sorry, wrote a new regulation where they are shutting down all of the coal fire plants by 2038, is it? 37, 38? That's not that far away. Do you know our power plants that generate our electricity? The majority of them are coal. That's where we get our power, out of that magic little box, you know, by the baseboard of your wall. That's not a little magic box. That comes from coal fire plants. Where are you going to, because you won't build another nuclear power plant, which is the cleanest. Right up next to that is natural gas. We were told natural gas was fantastic. That's why California went to all natural gas vehicles for the state, remember? Leading the way. Were they lying then, or are we lying now? What are we going to replace that with? And by the way, if we all have to plug our cars in 2034, we don't have the electricity today. Before they've broken the grid, we don't have the power today. When you shut down all of the other electrical plants and you replace it with magic fairy dust, how are we going to drive, or are we not going to? Are we going to really, without choice, but of course without force, you just won't be able to do it. Gosh darn it. Are we all going to live in these 15-minute walkable cities? I have no problem with a walkable city. I like walkable cities. When I lived in New York, I loved it. I walked everywhere. But I also want to be able to go someplace if I want to. Did you see that landing of Lufthansa yesterday? I don't know. I'd be freaking out if that was... That's Lufthansa. I don't know if you know anything about Lufthansa, but they're Germans. Germans tend to be accurate on things. You know why? That was a lesson. That was a training lesson. You have almost 400 people on a plane and you're doing a train... Could you post that on the front door? So when I'm walking in, I go, oh, the pilot is in training. Okay. No, thank you. Planes falling out of the skies. Can't trust Boeing now. When have we ever seen a time when you can't trust Boeing? Do you know, yesterday the GDP came out. For the first quarter, our economy increased at a rate of 1.6%. They had been looking for an increase of maybe 2.5, 3.4. Previous period, 4.9. Fourth quarter, 2023, 4.9. It's 1.5. That's not good. No, but the economy is doing really well. The economy is doing really, really well. And so you have nothing to worry about. Because the experts, the one who brought us this economy, the ones who have engineered, socially engineered all of this stuff, the ones who have shut your local restaurant down or your local business down because COVID was so dangerous, now they're going after the unrealized gains. Does America have any idea what this means? It's part of the budget proposal for 2025. 2025, if this guy is elected, this is in the proposal for next year's legislation and budget. They want to raise an additional $4.3 trillion by imposing a minimum tax equal to 25% of a taxpayer's taxable income and unrealized capital gains. So your house, now they're saying this is only for rich people. Yeah, that's what Woodrow Wilson said. We're going to tax 7% on only the top 1%, and it will never change. Within 3 years, it was 95%, and everybody was paying income tax. So this is only for the very, very wealthy. But if your house is appraised and it goes up, you have to pay that unrealized capital gains. So if your house has, you know, gone up by $100,000, congratulations, you now have to pay, I'm not even sure what it is, 25%? Where are you going to get that money if you haven't sold your house? That's the point. They don't want you to own a house. You won't own anything, and you'll be happy. This is a way for you to not own anything. What do you think that's going to do to the economy? What do you think it's going to do to people's buying power? To people going out and buying things other than the government and places like BlackRock? Do you know, when we first started talking about Obamacare, I think the government controlled maybe 20, 25% of the economy. Somebody have to look this up for me, as I'm sure these numbers are wrong, but directionally they're right. We're approaching 50% of the economy being controlled by the federal government now. 50%. That means you're halfway there to communism. You're halfway there to them controlling all of the spending in America. Because they control healthcare, they control travel, they control all of these different things that answer to the government. And they're spending so much money, they're buying all the drugs. They're buying roads and bridges, all of the concrete. They're almost 50%. What does the government create? What is it we have as an asset? You know, if they were out making money, not taking money, but making money and buying assets with that, that we could go, all right, that's going to appreciate in value, but nothing they make makes money. And everything depreciates in value, including the dollar, one of the other things they make.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So 2 years ago, I had this guy on, Christopher Bentley, and he was writing for the Federalist at the time. And he said he had written a piece, I think it was 2 years after the lockdowns, the West troubles aren't ending. They're just beginning. And I thought he had some real foresight. Was he right about that. Christopher Bedford now is a senior editor for Politics, Washington correspondent for the Blaze Media. He has written for The American Mind, The Washington Examiner, National Review, The New York Post. He was the editor-in-chief for the Daily Caller News Foundation, and we're thrilled to have him at theblaze.com. So help me out on this, Chris, because for the life of me, I cannot get my head around Speaker Johnson being a secret spy. Do you buy this?
Not completely, no. And first of all, it's great to be on the pirate ship, especially in these stormy waters. I think it's a great crew to be sailing with.
But, thank you.
Here in D.C., an article that caught my eye was a 2018 Daily Beast piece after Johnson became the head of the Republican Study Committee, which was founded as a conservative committee but was taken over by Republican leadership under Boehner and kind of became a hangout spot for Republicans. That's kind of started the Freedom Caucus. Now, you saw Johnson had been hanging out with the Freedom Caucus. He'd been going to their meetings. He'd not been paying dues, which is a big faux pas. It's hard to collect those dues, but they go to paying the few shared staff the Freedom Caucus has. He'd not been participating, but he'd been going to those meetings. So when he became the new chairman of the Republican Study Committee, a lot of his colleagues, Republican, more liberal colleagues, said, well, this guy's just a double agent. He just sneaked on here. He's pretending to not be part of the Freedom Caucus, the conservative group, but really this is just a conservative takeover. And I looked at that, and I looked at how since he'd become speaker, someone who I had a lot of hope for, you had a lot of hope for,
yeah.
I was excited to see,
me too.
Wow, this is the first social conservative and Republican leadership in decades who actually cares about this stuff. We might have a fighting chance here. And it's been extremely disappointing. So I think there's some...
That might be an understatement.
there's a way that he seems to negotiate, whether it's government funding, impeachment, FISA, now Ukraine. And step one is a major decision comes along his way. And then he goes back and forth. Step two, and he's not sure what to do. He delays it as long as he possibly can. Then he tweaks what was originally offered. He pretends that it was a win, and he asks Democrats to bail him out. That seems to be what's going on here. So, but when you look back at this Daily Beast piece, and you look back at the people who've known him, and have known him to be a good man, which by all accounts he is in his personal life, you have to wonder what could be driving him. And it seems to be kind of a classic case of Washington, D.C. extreme ambition, an ability to deceive himself, which is not too uncommon. You think a lot of the folks here in Washington are real hypocrites or real bad men who claim to be doing the Lord's work when in fact they're just doing their own. But a surprising amount of them have really convinced themselves they are on the good side, that they are on that really creepy quote, the right side of history, that they are the good guys who are going to come and save the day, and this is why the Lord put them there. And it really feeds into an incredible ego, an incredible amount of ambition, and also just the sad reality that a lot of these folks are pretty weak as leaders and people. They're capable, like many of us are, of standing at the back of the crowd and saying, I agree, this is bad, or being a backbencher who says, I'm not sending any more money to that bloodbath, or I don't care what the defense industry puts on me. I'm not going to let women be drafted. It's easy to say that when you're not the leader. But when you're in the center and you take all those arrows and all those slings and all those scary skiff meetings from the intel community, and it's all on you, you have to answer for that. Well, that's when you find out who's really a leader and who's just ambitious.
You know, there's a in your article for Blaze, you talked to a lot of the his colleagues. And one of his senior staffers that worked with him in 2018 said, the speaker is someone who could forgive himself for lying because he thinks it's for a higher purpose. He has an exceptional capacity for self-justification. That's not good.
That's something I found. No, it's not good. And it's something that I found repeated over and over again about Johnson. You know, when he ran for speaker as kind of a dark horse surprise candidate, a lot of his colleagues, Republican colleagues, and even the ones who are much more conservative, were willing to say, you know, I know him personally. He's a man of God, and therefore I trust him. But they didn't want to look at the record. They didn't want to look at, well, what happens when leadership puts a little bit of pressure on him? How does his vote change? Will he actually, his personal religious beliefs and his commitments aside, how do those actually shine as a statesman, as someone who's willing to take the arrows for that, those causes? And they don't. The votes didn't back it up. But he looked at this, as what I've been told by his colleagues, as something that he's been put in this position. He's been chosen for this. And if he needs to lie, if he needs to deceive, if he needs to twist arms to further it, then he is on the right side. That, again, that creepy quote that I've heard him saying since, the right side of history, that the other people are on the wrong side of history, and that his actions can therefore be justified. I mean, we see this all the time. You see it in levels like this with politics. You see it, of course, a lot since 2016 with a lot of the left saying that people who support Donald Trump are basically the Nazis. Well, once you say that you're on the side of God or they're on the side of Hitler, then you can justify a lot of actions that I think a moral person would not otherwise be able to justify.
So what do you think's coming for him, for the rest of us? Are we just stuck with a guy who is pathetic and weak now, because the Democrats would absolutely vote to keep him in?
You know, I'm curious about that, because everyone's on recess right now and things are quieted down. But then the question is, with everything that's coming down next, how is he going to be able to continue to govern here? Right now, he's essentially, even though he's the Speaker of the House and supposedly the head of the Republican coalition, he's really governing as a kind of a prime minister of a center-left coalition, the Uniparty, which has always kind of governed D.C., but now is really being open about it, where he's got half of Republicans on his side and about two-thirds of Democrats on his side. So how is he actually going to be able to pass anything with that coalition? The Democrats will protect him. The Republicans, a lot of them, are never going to come back to him. What's he actually going to be able to do in the next couple of weeks? I kind of wonder if he's a lame duck speaker, because he's got these folks, but they've accomplished their $95 billion. Then again, there's also already leaked rumors that they're planning the next big handout to the Ukraine war, that they're planning to come in September. And I suspect that he'll still be speaker through September, but what's going to happen in November is either Republicans are going to lose their slim majority, in which case he won't be speaker, or they'll win it. And then he's going to have to look around and find out amongst those liberal Republicans who are his allies, who's actually going to put him up for speaker, and what are all the alternatives. Right now, he's kind of running against no one. Well, so he could maintain that, but it will be difficult.
You being in Washington, hanging out or around these people all the time, watching them, listening to them, what do you think they think is coming in November?
I think people, Republicans, are cautiously optimistic for a Donald Trump victory. But, of course, there are a huge amount of shenanigans that are already unfolding. There's worries about what's going to be the new COVID, what's going to be the new moral panic that causes it, so that voting can't be done squarely and in full view of the public. The Republican National Committee has been trying to mix up its plan for how to, whether it's going to do early voting, where its lawyers are going to be. We know that it's going to be, I think, chaos. Either Donald Trump actually wins and the left wing takes the streets like they did in 2016, burning cars, attacking people, or Donald Trump loses. And either way, I think that a large parts of this country are going to not be satisfied with the election results. It's a The tension that existed in 2016 has not gotten any less.
How do the Democrats feel to you? Confident? Worried?
No, they were significantly more worried before Joe Biden's State of the Union. And you saw that in the pages of the New York Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC, people openly wishing that they could have a different candidate. Just like you saw in 2020 with people wishing that it was Cuomo instead of Joe Biden. But we'll see a lot, actually, this weekend with the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where everyone's going to be paying attention to Joe Biden's remarks. Are they clear? Are they concise? Is he funny like he can be when he's on, like he was at some points of the State of the Union? But there's a real fear amongst Democrats that Donald Trump is coming back, that the constant cycle of drama that they surrounded his entire 4 years with hasn't stuck with the American people because so much of it was fake. So much of it was just impossible to remember because there were fake scandals. Democrats in town are not confident that they'll get the White House, but they are feeling fairly confident about Congress.
We're talking to Christopher Bedford. He is the Blaze senior media political editor and the Blaze Media Washington correspondent. When do they come back into session?
Next week. Short vacation, and the Senate was even cut down a little shorter because they had to stick around to do the American people's business, and I'm being sarcastic on that. They spent $95 million abroad.
Real quick, any thoughts on the Trump trial this week? Biden said, the DOJ said, actually, that Trump is the first president to face criminal prosecution because predecessors, other presidents, just didn't commit any crimes.
Yeah, I remember when Barack Obama left office, yeah. The Washington Post said it was a scandal-free administration.
Yeah, totally.
So I think there were some dead border agents who could disagree with that. The Trump trial is going to be interesting. It's in New York. It's tough. The judge is obviously against him, but the prosecution has embarrassed itself so far. The case is so weak that, and you kind of forget that in the hubbub of all the news, that it's relying on a bunch of liars to turn a misdemeanor that is outside of the statute of limitations into a felony because of another misdemeanor that can barely be cited. And it took the prosecution 2 days even to come up with that argument. And at the same time, the Supreme Court seems like it's going to crack down and at least limit what the president is able to do with his authority. So that will help push some of the other trials back to after the election if that happens. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if Trump's in a prison cell or not, because he's not out campaigning. He's not able to leave New York. He's kind of stuck. He wasn't able to weigh in these last Capitol Hill fights. They haven't put him in a prison cell, but they somewhat put him in a room. And that's something that you'll see, and you'll probably see some jokes about it, that this big fancy dinner they're having this weekend, they'll be laughing at us about how they still managed to stop probably the greatest campaigner in modern history from being able to campaign.
So do you think that hurts him? I mean, because the people who are going to vote for him are going to vote for him anyway. And the ones who, you know, really, they'd vote for him, but they really don't like his tweets and his personality and everything else. By keeping him off the road and yet still in the public eye, you keep the focus on Joe Biden. And is there any case to be made that's good for Donald Trump?
So far, it actually hasn't hurt him, exactly to your point. And the folks in the suburbs who maybe voted for Trump in 2016 and voted for Biden in 2020, they're, to your point, they're not going to be swayed by a rally. They're not going to be swayed by the kind of popcorn and rah-rah that goes on at those fun events. But they are being swayed a little bit by the incredible unfairness. The question is whether or not they're going to be able to actually get felony charges on him, because that's the kind of thing that does spook those easily frightened voters.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.
It's great to be back.